Hello everyone and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. This podcast covers a wide range of youth basketball topics, from high school and AAU basketball to college recruiting, NCAA, NBA, overseas basketball, mental health and performance, leadership, and much more. Now let's jump into today's conversation. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome back. That's right. Welcome back to the Youth Hoops Pod. Got another high school resource episode for all of our parents and players listening out there. Excited to bring in another PSB family member with us. It's on to bigger and better things. Chris Goodrum, National Director for Pro Skills Basketball, coming at you again. Our guest today is none other than the Davidson legend. He lived in Davidson, not played at Davidson. Will Merrill, who is now the assistant coach at Suwanee College, the School of the South. Will, what's up, my guy?
What's up, Chris? Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Thank you for joining us. So, you know, the legend, the lore of Will, help everyone understand kind of your maturation, how you went from this basketball hoop loving individual in Davidson, North Carolina, to now you get to pour into young men as an assistant coach at Suwanee.
Yeah, it's a pretty sorry legend, man. It's a short story, and it's not very legendary. But I played at Suwanee, played at Cannon and North Mech, and then came up to Suwanee and played basketball up here. And when I graduated, I thought I was going to make a career out of the military. Got a little banged up, so ended up getting out of the military and was just kind of wondering, okay, I've got these leadership skills. I love basketball. I'm going to put it all together. So coached for a couple years with Pro Skills during the early days, the infancy of Pro Skills, back when it was at Woodlawn School.
Back in the day.
Yeah, that was back in the day, yeah. And then convinced Coach Lundy at Queens University of Charlotte to give me a shot for basically no money. And just went up there and tried to grind for those guys and learn the game and found my way back up to the mountain up in Suwanee and very appreciative for the opportunity I've got up here working for Coach Emerson, who's a D3 savant.
Yeah, so I think your story's cool because I think a lot of individuals think that basketball, the only outcome that comes from it, other than the immediate outcome of I won or lost a game, is I can either be a basketball player in high school and then be a basketball player in college and then my journey ends, or I can go professional somewhere or my journey's over. But a lot of people don't understand that basketball is a tool or mechanism to open up a multitude of doors in a player's life. And so when you think back about those days at North Mech and then Cannon, I mean, ultimately the goal was to play in college, but did you ever think you'd find yourself on a college coach's bench?
I did not, no. And I think if you asked my coaches from high school days, they would be equally as surprised to find me on a college coach's bench. But what I found through that journey is that, like you said, there's so many other doors that basketball can open, especially in today's age where you've got like creative marketing, you've got social media, you've got a whole new world of analytics that coaches are starting to get into. You've got this new GM role with NIL. And so you can find really specialized skill sets that you can pair with a passion for basketball that all of a sudden makes, maybe you don't want to go do marketing for like a toilet paper company, but doing marketing for Carolina basketball could be really, really fun for you. And that's kind of what I did, was I went down the leadership rabbit hole and was like, oh man, learned some pretty good skills in the Air Force. Like, maybe I can use this on some young men and help mentor them a little bit.
Very cool. So what would your just quick pitch to any of our young athletes out there, whether it's middle school, high school, just about just the journey in general and not stressing to worry about your recruitment, your stat line, and just enjoy the lessons and the process that you get kind of in the trenches of basketball?
I think that we are led to believe that the basketball journey is a linear one, where you go from A straight to B, maybe it's high school basketball to college basketball, and then maybe C is playing professionally or coaching. And the reality is that the basketball journey is not a straight line and it's not a linear process. It's better viewed as a mosaic. where you have all these different individual experiences that if you put them on a graph are going to look really, really random because they're nonlinear. But then when you step back and you view the overall picture of your basketball experience, you've got all these little beautiful stained glass pieces that present your full journey, which is more of a mosaic sort of image.
So there's beauty in randomness.
Absolutely. Yeah, all right. Definitely.
All right.
Boy, that's way better put. Thanks.
Yeah. No. I love it. The Will Merrill mosaic. The WMM. I got it. On to the recruiting process and kind of the D3 world. Give the listeners that maybe don't know anything about Swanee Hoops or D3 Hoops. I know we've done this with Merkel and Will Coble and some other, and Carl Barkley. Shout out, Carl. Got your boy on the podcast.
Hey,
what would you tell to the listeners about Swanee basketball, D3 basketball?
I would say that it is as much of a commitment during your season as the Division I or Division II world looks like. And having come from the Queens background, I've at least seen what a really high-level D2 looks like. We're watching film for an hour or two. We've got a couple hours of practice. We'll lift weights. We're practicing 6 days a week, which is as much as the NCAA lets us. And we're traveling all over the Southeast for games. And so for guys that think, oh, you know, I want to play more than intramurals or maybe like club, but I want to do it with a school jersey on, you know, you're out of your mind. The top 1% of players are Division I players. Then the next 1% are Division II players. And then the next like 1.5% are Division III players. So if you're a high school guy and you're listening to this, you know, think of your 100 best basketball buddies. 3.5% means 3.5 of your best friends are going to play at the college level. And the Division III world is absolutely part of that. And you can extend that to NAIA and JUCO. And with the COVID years and with the way the transfer portal looks these days, the lines, those different 1% echelons, are even more blurred than they've ever been.
Yeah, so for a minute, let's talk about just the whole transfer portal, because I know May 1st is kind of the end day for, you know, transfers and all of that to happen. How does that impact you all at the D3 level, right? Like, so talk through kind of what, you know, you and Emerson and all of your other coaching staff that sit down, how are you navigating the conversations around, hey, we got that May 1st deadline, or hey, here's some JUCO interest that we're getting, or hey, here's unsigned 2024s, and then let's get to 2025s.
So our model is really different from a lot of Division III's. When you look at high academic Division III schools, which we are fortunate to consider ourselves part of, our recruiting window wraps up much earlier than most other schools.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because we need student athletes to apply early action, which is a non-binding application window. So there's no commitment. And what that does is it gives you sort of bonus points, so to speak, on your application to help you get into the school. And so if we're going to offer three or four guys for the, let's say, the point guard position, chances are by December, one of those three or four guys is really excited about Swanee and is ready to commit, and that spot's gone. And so our roster is usually full before the transfer portal even opens up. And we've been really fortunate as an organization that we haven't lost any players to the transfer portal. We just met with our guys. We bring back 15 returners from last year. Not a single one of them is in the portal, and not a single one of them is quitting the team. And so we don't really mess with the transfer portal as much. And I think a part of that is because it's hard to replicate the high academic experience and the benefits of the high academic degree at other schools that may be messing around in the portal. And likewise, it's hard for us to get transfer guys into Swanee if they aren't coming from another high academic institution. Like, we're really limited in the number of schools in the nation that we could really recruit from the portal. And then even those guys have to have really strong grades. And chances are, if they're flourishing at that school, they're probably not looking to leave.
Right. So one thing that you touched on, which I think is super important for any players and parents to hear, and so I just want to make sure that we cover it again, is when you're going out and you're air quotes offering players, if you're offering this 5'11", 6'1", guard, odds are there's four other offers sitting at other 5'11", to 6'1", guards of equal kind of comparable skill set, right? And so really it's on a first come, first serve. And so it's really important for players and parents to do your due diligence on the front end. with any schools that you're interested in, making sure that you're applying, that you're having conversations with the admissions office, with the coaching staff, making sure that you have your finances in order, however those finances are going to work itself out, and then making sure that you also, hey, is this where I want to go? Do I see myself at this school, even if basketball's not even in contention? Do I love the community that this school creates? And then making that decision sooner rather than later, because it's on a first-come, first-served basis. And that's probably likely the case for a lot of schools.
Yeah, I mean, that you're hitting the nail on the head. I think it was last year we had a player that we were really interested in, and we had a visit planned, and we were ready to offer him on that visit, and we really, really liked him. But another guy came at his spot the weekend before. You know, he moved his visit for a high school football game. Another guy comes the weekend before and then commits on his visit. And so it's like, it doesn't really matter how interested we were in him or how interested he was in us. He wasn't really making his recruiting a priority, and he loses out on an opportunity because of that. And that player's having, he just had a great season and he's playing for a great program. So it all worked out for him. But if you're a guy that is really serious about your recruiting, the best thing you could do is come into this summer with a strategy. And that strategy should look like, what are the types of schools I'm interested in? Who are the types of coaches I'm going to reach out to? And how am I going to reach out to them? And so you should already be prepped going into the summer of like, these are 10 or 15 programs that if I get an opportunity to play there, I got to really take that visit seriously. Because chances are by December, certainly by second semester, that window to make a decision is probably gone. You've probably lost that opportunity.
One question I had for you, because I feel like I talk to parents about this all the time and players. Even if a player is not interested in Suwanee basketball, but you, Coach Emerson, someone reaches out, should they call you back?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there are so many schools out there that it's kind of impossible to know enough about every school to really know I'm interested in them or I'm not interested in them. And there may be something about Suwanee that it's a no-brainer. We're too far away, or I refuse to go to school that's that far from, you know, we're an hour from a big city, and that's really important to them. In which case, you know, we would appreciate the callback. I think most coaches would appreciate the callback. It reflects well on your teammates and the program that you play in, reflects well on your AAU coach and your high school coach when you return calls. But a lot of times we'll get on the phone with guys and they'll say, no, I've never heard of Suwanee in my entire life. And after 20 minutes, they're going, man, this sounds like a pretty good school. So it's always worth at least picking up the phone.
Yeah. Do you talk though, right? Like does, you know, Nunley at Roanoke or Merkle, hey, I see you guys are recruiting this kid. We're recruiting him. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? Like, do you guys talk? So if someone does just ghost you, is that a topic of conversation with the coaching community?
It can be. I mean, I think it depends on the coach's relationship at the college level. You know, I'm not going to go ask a random guy how his recruiting is going
right
with the same kid we're interested in. But yeah, I've definitely had some conversations with coaches about players that we had mutual interest in and both of us dropped off. And we're kind of going, hey, what was going on with you guys with him? And turns out it's a pretty shared experience. And so, yeah, we definitely have those conversations. And word gets around of like, you know, this is a program that Pro Skills, for example, is a great example. You guys give great resources for players. And so if we talk to a guy, we know that they're going to be well prepared for the conversation. They know what they're looking for from a college. There are other AAU programs that aren't quite the same way and aren't quite as well coached in those conversations. And word gets out of like, hey, if you're going to recruit from this program, just be ready. It's going to be a tough conversation.
Yeah, we're going to pin that topic because we're going to circle back to it. So when we talk about players and parents and kind of just recruitment, personalities, characteristics, intangibles, behaviors, in your experience, Coach, what are the top things parents and players should be doing or should be focusing on?
Well, in terms of things that they can control, I talked a little bit about having a recruiting strategy. So that's sort of step one. And the first piece of step one is doing some research on what kind of schools fit you. And I think when you think about a fit, you need to think academically, does it fit? Can you do the work there? And is it going to challenge you? Athletically, does it fit? Is it a good style of play? And we can get into that here in a little bit. But I think other pieces that don't get touched on quite as much are socially, is it a fit? Is it going to stimulate you socially? And the last piece is financially. With the way that FAFSA has kind of been redone and small colleges across the country are reviewing how they handle their FAFSA applications, you really need to be thinking about, is this school fit my family situation financially? And things that we look at as a program off the court are, you know, every time I talk to a high school coach, I want to know, what are this guy's leadership qualities? How do you see him fitting into an organization if he's not the guy? And I think that's something that, I mean, not just players, coaches too, that we can always be improving on and be focused on and thinking about is, what's my body language like when I miss a shot? Am I getting back on defense or am I dropping my head and arguing with the ref? What's my body language like when I come off for a timeout and I'm getting coached hard? Parents, you know, we're watching you guys in the stands. What's your body language like when there's a bad call? Are you trying to get them to the next play or are you just as distracting? If you disagree with the coach, can I hear it from the baseline? Do I know that you don't like the way that your child is being coached during the game, or is that a quiet conversation later? And those are conversations that are usually pretty candid with a high school coach. You know, if you ask, hey, what's their parents like? And it's not a great relationship. It doesn't matter how much they try to hide it. You get that first face of like, well, and you know, that's all I really need to hear.
Yeah. So two things that you hit on that I just want to re-raise is one, the FAFSA. Carl of D3 Direct talked about this and talked about how like the timeline doesn't really match up to benefit a player, especially if you have another player that's a full player, full pay, that doesn't need a FAFSA or anything like that. It tends to benefit that family before it benefits a family of a player that does need some type of merit to help with finances. So again, just a call out to parents, make sure you do that well in advance and you're currently working through that. All of our 17s, so 2024s, this should be a part of your process now, is identifying your schools, working through applications, figuring out who you need to contact, working with your program, working with your high school coach to start the conversations on the athletic side, and then you as a family starting the conversation on the admission side, and starting from a financial standpoint, all of those processes that you need that works best for your family. So that was one. And then, Coach, you talked about kind of the intangibles. I'm curious to hear, when you guys are recruiting for Suwannee, what are the culture non-negotiables that you're – and I'm not talking about this dude can score a bucket. What are the culture non-negotiables that you at Suwannee are looking for, and probably aligns with a lot of other schools as well?
Yeah, I think probably the most important one, especially at the Division III level, is do they like the game – or do they love the game? And the reason that's so important for us is because we're limited in what we can do in on-court development. You know, we can be on the court with them from our first practice, usually in late September, early October, NCAA just changed the date, all the way through basically a week after our last game. And then outside of that, we really can't be on the court doing any kind of instruction. So we need guys that are self-motivated, that are self-starters, and guys that just live to be in the gym. You know, if you lock the gym door for 3 days, are they going to start getting twitchy? Or are they going to like try to be breaking into windows to get extra shots up? Or are they guys that are like, oh, thank goodness, finally a break. I don't have to go get shots up today. And that to us, you know, we think that's a big difference between guys that could be all conference level players and maybe like a fringe role guy. So for us, that's really the culture non-negotiable. And then the other piece of it is we have a lot of, again, very fortunate. We've got a lot of really good player accountability in our locker room. And so it's one thing to be coached by a coach who, you know, air quotes, subject matter expert. It's another thing to be coached by your peer. You know, our seniors and freshmen, there's really only 3 or 4 years difference. So really they're peers. And it's how do you take it if your peer is trying to hold you accountable to make you a better player? Are you going to get argumentative and get in their face about it? Or are you the kind of guy that can take a little constructive criticism? And then the last non-negotiable is just a competitive streak, a mean streak to you.
A player-led team is better than a coach-led team any day of the week. And then we need players who are okay being held accountable. And so I could not agree more with that. I just love a player-level cadence of accountability. What about top things parents and players should not be focusing on? Like, what are trends that you're seeing where you're like, man, I wish this – you know, what is this player being told, or what is up with this misinformation, or what is this parent referring to, or like, so what are things that parents and players just shouldn't focus on?
That's kind of Pandora's box. you know, I'd say one thing that I have seen increasingly amount, increasingly often is sort of this obsession with the comparison game. I think largely in response to sort of social media, you know, they'll see, for example, a guy will see a couple of his buddies post an offer and all of a sudden they start getting really antsy. Where are mine? Why isn't my recruiting look the exact same? And there are so many factors and there's so much that goes into it that, again, we talk about the mosaic. It's not linear. All you can do is focus on your own mosaic and keep growing yourself as a player and as a person. And so that's probably the biggest one. It's like, stay off of the comparison game. Don't worry about what other guys are doing. Worry about your game. And then I think the other thing, and this is the D3 in me coming out, but I think players get really caught up in chasing the level. And they, you know, to some players, it's better. I want to wear the high major or mid major T-shirt, but be a walk-on rather than I could really be an impactful player and get a good degree at the Division III level. And for some guys, that's fine. I mean, that's it. That's what they want out of their experience. But for other guys, and we see this really, really frequently, Coach, we see a lot of guys go the walk-on route and go, man, I'm a player. What am I doing sitting at the end of the bench for 4 years waving a towel? And all of a sudden, these guys start boomeranging back around. And like we just talked about with the transfer portal, and there's so much less availability in the spring, it's like, you know, it's hard to help those guys sometimes. And so I think really being intentional about, I guess I should say, really not focusing on the level and really focusing more on the fit is the best advice I could get. You know, I just had a son, and you know, that's it, man. That's the $1 million advice for him is like, maybe you're a Division I player, maybe you're an NAIA player. Go where you fit, man. Go where you're going to have a good career.
Absolutely, I love it. One, congratulations.
Thank you, appreciate it.
That's exciting and.
Sometimes it's condolences, but I'll take congratulations.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. I have two. I have an 11-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter. So it depends on the day of the week.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's the truth.
What should parents and players be focused on? I got to get mine. I got to score. College coaches want to see me score. I'm not going to get recruited if I'm averaging 4 points a tournament.
Yeah, it's so funny you bring that up. Like, we sign a guy who's an incoming freshman, and he's a guard from Virginia. He's a little 5'11", like water bug, just the quickest dude. And he averaged maybe 7 points a game over his junior and senior year. And, you know, we don't need another scorer. We got plenty of scorers on the team. We got two guys that are going to be 1,000-point scorers on the team right now. To bring in another guy that needs 10, 15 shots a game doesn't help us. So we were out there looking for a guy that's pass first, that can get in the backcourt and create some havoc. And so – this I got to get my mentality is everybody trying to get recruited to the same scorer spot. And like, you got maybe one of those guys, maybe two on a team. You know, if that's the only spot that you're going to get yourself recruited to, you're really limiting your availability to a college program. Show them that you can do some other things. You know, if I see a guy come across my email that's averaging 7 assists a game, but 4 points, like, I'm definitely watching that guy. We need some dudes that can pass the ball. You know, we got our scores.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that I got to get mine is just, you know, it's, I get it. I get where it comes from, but it's really limiting for high school athletes.
Well, and I think you can parlay that back into what parents and kids should focus on. And the conversation we were having before we started on Jimmy Mitchell, who, you know, Jimmy plays at Swanee, came from Charlotte, Country Day product. Jimmy is a coach's player because when he practices, that's the game for him. And of course he wants to be on the court during the, you know, when the lights are on and the game is being played, but he is causing mass havoc and making his teammates better when he's practicing as well. And that's a part of the college experience. And I think it goes to our young players understanding that there is no alpha dog role a lot of times in college basketball, unless you're a top 150 kid playing at a, you know, D1, playing at a very high D2, playing at a very high D3, and that's the role the coaches have brought you in. But for the most part, the role that they're bringing you in for is to be the assist guy, to be the facilitator, to be the versatile defender that can defend a 3-5 or a 1-3, to be the extra pass man, to be the rebounder. I got a guy who averages about 8 or 9 rebounds a game. and he's frustrated he's not scoring right now. And I'm like, yo, college coaches love guys who are gritty under the basket. And if you can secure offensive and defensive rebounds, there's a role for you somewhere. So
yeah,
focus on what you're great at. Merkel calls it focus on your superpower, right? So if your superpower is rebounding, getting the 50-50 ball, being the energy guy, being the lockdown 94-foot defender, be really good at that. And I promise you college coaches are going to see it, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what about programs, right? You guys have conversations with high school coaches, with travel ball programs. Why does the program that players play for matter?
Yeah, so I mean, there's so many different angles to this. I think the most important one for a player is to find a program that fits your style of play. And we see this all the time. You know, we run a lot of Princeton concepts. And so for us, it's really, really important to find guys that can shoot it well, but that can pass and can cut and understand how to play in space without a script. And we see a lot of guys in travel ball who have that skill set, but they're on, you know, say like a dribble drive team, and they're being asked to break a guy down one-on-one every possession, and they're just getting ripped. And it's like, that's not that guy's game. He could be a good player, but that's not really his game. And so part of it is finding a program that fits your style of play. And I think another piece of it is having an appropriate exposure. I think a lot of guys are really similar to chasing a level at the college level. They're chasing sort of the shoe teams. And there are a lot of guys that can be good players at the high school and college level that don't need to be playing on the shoe circuits, or that are they may get missed in their recruitment. You know, we don't really watch the shoe circuits because most of those guys are not dudes that we're going to be able to recruit. And so if you're like evaluating your game and you're making your strategy and you're thinking, I've got these six or seven Division III schools I'm really interested in, but you're playing on the Nike circuit or you're playing on the Puma circuit, like, we may never see you, you know? And so I think aligning yourself with a program that's going to provide an appropriate exposure for you is really, really important. I think, and this is a great nod to PSB, the resources a program can provide for you are really, really important. You know, just that you guys are doing this podcast and trying to provide recruiting information, and you've got these great blogs that coach guys on what a good email looks like. How do you set up your Twitter? How do you reach out to a coach? Finding an AAU program that can coach you through a lot of that stuff is so, so important. I mean, that's how a lot of guys get on our radar, is how they reach out to us. And that makes a big difference. And there are some AAU programs that don't really have those resources. You know, they want to put 10 guys in a van and go try to win a weekend. And it kind of hinders some of their players that they don't have those resources. And I think coupled in with the resource piece is just having coaches and guys like you that have experience in the recruiting scene and have a lot of coaching experience and can help develop guys over the summer. You know, if you finish your high school season in the spring and then go back to the fall and you've got a summer slide, you haven't gotten better, you're probably with the wrong program. You need to be with a program that understands your game and your strengths and weaknesses, and is going to take the time to evaluate you and develop you as a player, and not just as a cog in whatever machine that they're running on the weekends.
Yeah. So you alluded to being a freshly minted father. So when your son gets of the age where you're considering travel basketball, when he's elementary, middle school age, what are you looking for in a program? Like, what should they be focused on? What do you want your son to be poured into in X, Y, or Z?
Boy, that's a great elementary and middle school. That's a good twist on this. I think developing a holistic player and developing a joy for the game is really, really important at that level, especially elementary school, but even in the middle school. You know, you don't know who you are as an eighth grader. A lot of guys don't know who they are as an 11th grader, as a player. You know, that maybe you know you're a catch and shoot guy or you're a playmaking point guard. But for a lot of guys, there's still growth spurts in front of them, and there's a lot of development in front of them. And so if I took my son to a tryout and the guy came over to me and he said, okay, he's going to be a 3-and-D wing and I'm going to develop him like that this summer, I'm going to be like, what are you talking about? You know, he's in seventh grade. What do you mean? How do you know that? And so I think guys that are willing to teach the full spectrum of the game and teach more than just put the ball on the ground and try to break your guy down one-on-one, I think that's really, really important. And coaches that know how to put a little joy into their practices, put a little joy into the game, you know, I went through boot camp. It's not fun. I wouldn't want to do that for 4 years as a student athlete. And so having a coach that can find some ways to make things fun, I think is really important, especially at the younger level.
What about now he's transitioning into high school, sophomore, junior. What is your advice for parents when they're engaging with, hey, this could be a program, that could be a program that my child plays with? What is important for parents to keep in mind or to consider when they're going through that from the high school? Because once you start going to, hey, your son does possess or has been evaluated, or we could see him play at a certain collegiate level, okay, great. Well, now it's time to find a program that can help him open those doors.
I think that the same way that I would ask a student athlete and their parent to have a strategy and around their development and their recruiting, I would want to evaluate that AAU program strategy for my child as well. Of like, okay, you're telling me we're in 10th or 11th grade. You're telling me that my son can play at the college level. Okay, well, that's point B. We're at point A. Fill in the mosaic for me to figure out what are the things that we needed to be developing as a family and as a player, and what's your role in that? I think an AAU program that is mindful of their role in that process can go a long way in terms of developing a partnership for that eventual outcome.
Will, towards the end of our podcast, we like to give our guests the microphone and the mountain. And so you have 30 seconds, 60 seconds, anything you want to shout from the top of the mountaintop. This is your platform, whether it's basketball related, whether it's just, hey, I just want to pour into young men and women that are listening to this on their journey, their development, anything that's kind of on your heart or kind of resonates with you. The floor is yours, my friend.
Okay. Boy, I got a whole mountain of myself here.
That's
man.
Right.
This is awesome. I really think that I don't want to call it a crisis, but what I am seeing is an increasing trend from my coaching colleagues that we've gotten very carried away in the wins and losses and how that reflects on us. And I think that the most important thing that we can do for these young men is the mentorship role. And Coach McKillop, who retired from Davidson a few years ago and is a Hall of Fame coach, the phrase he I've heard him use is, we've got an abdication of leadership in our coaching core. And I think that as we go into this summer season, at all levels, we need to remind ourselves as coaches and challenge ourselves on what are we doing to provide value in their life outside of basketball. And how are we helping these young men and young women grow when it's not on the court and I don't have a clipboard in my hand? So that's my mountaintop spiel.
I love it. It's one thing, again, I'm a little biased because I love PSB, but that is the number one maxim internally as an organization for us. So we have our maxims. That is the number one maxim for us, that we are a business. We are a brand of business built on helping kids. And I agree with you times a thousand to the nth degree, that I feel like there's more pressure and onus and want and drive from parents and coaches and players to win more than they develop, and win as it relates to the convenience of, I want it now. I want to win
yeah.
now, instead of laying the foundation, laying the discipline, laying the habit to win 40 years from now. And I think that is something that's big for me. I coach my son's fifth grade team. We went 1-3 this weekend, and our guys didn't even look at the scoreboard. We don't focus on the scoreboard. We get lost in the competition, lost in the fight. And I think for all of our young players, all of our parents that are sitting on the sidelines squirming because their kids are struggling, let them struggle.
Struggle's good,
yeah.
man. Struggle is good.
Let them develop some resilience. Let them understand how they navigate adversity, even if they navigate it poorly at first, because that's a part of the development process. Reject that first thought you have, because that's the most rawest human thought you have. And it's okay to have those thoughts, but reject it and focus on that second thought, right? The first thought is, oh, this is bad. This can't happen. I've got to change. This is terrible. My daughter it like their confidence is shattered now. But the second thought is it shattered? How is this helping my son or daughter be able to manage and mitigate future adversity? I love your mountaintop speech because I think it resonates and should resonate with so many people that, hey, it's not the win after four quarters or two halves. It's the win 4 years from now. It's the win 10 years from now that we're setting our kids up for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Coach, man, I really appreciate you. I know you guys are doing great things down in Suwannee. Excited to watch how my guy Fletch does this year. Wish you the best. If you guys need anything, please don't hesitate to reach out. But definitely am grateful for you joining us on the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks again, Coach. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. For our listeners, appreciate you guys listening. As always, leave it all on the court.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so that you can stay tuned to future episodes. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at ProSkills Basketball on Instagram and Facebook and at ProSkills B-Ball on Twitter. And if you'd like to find out more information about our teams, camps, clinics, or virtual basketball, check out our website at www.proskillsbasketball.com. We'll see you soon on another conversation.